Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
What's the Astros' biggest need right now? And should they actually even bother making moves at the deadline? We'll talk about that here. Payne and Pendergast. I'm Luke Morrow in for Sean alongside Seth Payne. Seth, somebody said on the text line, I feel like Seth's idea for NFL-branded diapers is one step closer after seeing Coach Prime become a spokesperson for Depends.
Oh, is he?
Apparently.
Yeah. My idea was basically underoos for adults. That now, and I think they do make underoos for adults, or at least overweight children. That's where I shop for my adult underoos. I go to the Husky section.
The overweight children, yeah.
Yeah, Dillard's. It's a brilliant idea, but I lack the follow through to follow through in it. But yeah, like Texans branded Depends undergarments and stuff. I totally go for that.
Yeah, well,
when the day comes when I need it.
It might be. Yesterday we were talking about what pitch ideas would you bring to J.J. Watt on Shark Tank. That might be one, and especially now you got Coach Prime, you know, promoting Depends.
Does he say anything? Is there a testimonial? Does he have to use them or anything? Given his, I don't want to make light of his medical.
Yeah, right. That was my assumption, was that's the connection, but I have no idea. That came in on the text line. I didn't know Coach Prime was working with Depends now.
I'll be impressed if he actually goes full testimonial and like talks about like, you know, he's undergoing cancer treatment and everything. I had to do it. It's no big deal. Be like Coach Prime.
Yeah. He's making it cool. It's like in Billy Madison, right? If peeing your pants is cool, consider me Miles Davis.
Yeah.
It's becoming hip again.
So the first time Dion's out there, on the sideline, you're gonna have to see if there's a little extra bulge in his under his pants.
Yeah, that's always the worst for the old folks walking around. It gives them, you know, makes it look like a fupa or something. You got the diaper underneath. Speaking of Colorado, by the way, did you ever go through your NFL career without bothering to watch film on any of the opponents or anything? Did you ever just wing it?
Yeah. No. Nor in college either. Like that's one of the first big shocks to your system when you get to college is the first time you're in a film session, you're like, my God, like how much longer are we going to do this? Why is coach talking about the same play for 10 minutes in a row?
Yeah. Well, here was Julian Lewis of Colorado, Coach Prime's team there, talking about how they didn't watch film on defenses last year.
The most since last year to now.
My play, I'm actually looking at the defenses now. Last year, we wasn't really looking at defenses much, just kind of high school free ball and just out there playing football. But, you know, it's a lot bigger than that now, so it should be fun.
Which Colorado fans weren't all that happy about that. That they were just out there freeballing. Speaking of Depends, they were freeballing. I could go either way on this because especially when you're playing, it's in college and in high school, there are times where it really is more about, especially with a young quarterback, getting them to understand and play and execute the scheme. And realistically, a lot of good colleges are just, they're getting guys wide open based on the play call. And they're getting so much direction from the sideline that you can make the argument. Yeah. That for him that year, they just needed to get him to be able to execute the offense. And then you take a next step, but now it's with a different offensive coordinator. And now he can be a little bit more advanced, but I think it probably does speak to a little bit of just, man, what a big drop off it was for Colorado as they adjusted to not having, you know, a couple of the best college football players in the country on their team, kind of making things happen.
Yeah, maybe a big part of the reason why they went 1-8 in the conference last year. By the way, Pat Shurmur was the offensive coordinator. He's an NFL guy, so I am surprised that they operated like that, but.
But that's where it is. I mean, you kind of got to do a triage on the situation when you're looking at a team and when you've got young players and you're trying to install an offense or you're trying to get a young quarterback to come along. it said, okay, first and foremost, we got to get him to be able to execute the playbook, and then you can worry about the higher level stuff later on. But it's not ideal, obviously.
On the text line, somebody did say Coach Prime has publicly acknowledged that he uses adult diapers because of his medical
oh, okay.
condition. So yeah,
that's a strong move by Depends. I'm guessing it's hard to get genuine celebrity. Like, you're not going to get movie stars or anything to necessarily do that because they got to keep their cool factor as high
it's
as
true.
Possible.
It's true. Whereas
Dion, whether you love him or hate him, you have to acknowledge that he's got a cool factor, that's pretty extreme.
Yeah.
And, for him to do that, yeah, I think it would make me more comfortable.
Yeah.
I would go in and I would say, what are you laughing at me? No, Deion, you know who Deion Sanders is? And the 16-year-old girl working the register was like, no, I have no idea. And sir, no, I wasn't laughing at you. I was on my phone. Yeah.
I'm going to just start wearing them now, even though I don't need them because Deion's made it so cool.
People will claim that they'll do it when they're watching sports or something. But
oh,
I can't imagine that it's actually comfortable sitting there on a wet diaper.
Not
right?
a chance. People will do it for Times Square for New Year's Eve because you can't move. You want to get your spot. You got to get there early to go watch the ball drop. And people apparently will wear diapers. That's got to be the worst to walk around in a soggy diaper all night.
I'm gonna do that. I'm gonna go out and buy some Depends this afternoon.
Yeah, test them.
And I'm
gonna
experiment with it to see what it's like to actually sit after you've soiled them the first time with a reasonable amount of urine. I'm not going to change my. I'm not going to drink more fluids or anything.
It's the circle of life. Jerry Seinfeld has that whole bit of your last birthdays are like your first birthdays.
You know what I need to do? I don't think my wife is listening right now. I'm going to wear them for like a week and go in them. Normally, throughout the week.
Yeah.
And I'm going to see if she notices or not.
That would be great. Then that's a real campaign for Depends.
Yeah. Yeah. I did. I wore these for a week and my wife didn't even notice.
No smell, no tell. Depends. The Astros, by the way.
Probably ask why we've got a diaper genie in the pantry. But other than that, she's not going to have a clue.
Yeah, that's right. We'll really put them to the test to see how good they are. The Astros lost last night 8-2. Spencer Arrighetti got knocked around. He has an ERA of almost 9 here in the last 7 starts. Astros pitching has not been good. They've dropped the series to the Nationals. So I asked, what's their biggest need at the deadline at this point? And you can let us know, 713-572-4610. Because still, yesterday, Dana Brown, at least before that Arrighetti outing, is talking about, hey, we're looking to add a left-handed outfielder, which has been the company statement here for the last few months. But at this point, it seems like it's gotten so unshaky with this rotation that the Astros might need a pitcher more than anything else right now.
I do. I think that if you're going to be aggressive at the trade deadline because it's a failure, if you're not a playoff team, et cetera, and all that, the biggest issue right now on this team, the thing that would make it impossible to actually win a 7-game series, I think, is that you don't have enough pitchers to actually make it through. You might as well spot the other team 2 wins in a 7-game series, because at some point, whether it ends up being a Burroughs or an Arrighetti, or Emi, they're gonna have a couple of really horrendous performances. And that, first and foremost, I don't even want to talk about, pitching wins championships or anything. But I just, that's the most glaring issue that they have, despite having a really healthy win-loss record since late May. They're doing it while also having their starting rotation have about a 6 ERA. That all of a sudden you flip that with just one guy brought from outside and maybe one Christian Javier or something actually being a good performer. It completely flips how far you could actually go in the playoffs. And replacing Bryce Matthews with a left-handed bat, I don't think it does nearly as much for you as a starting pitcher right now.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's become such a glaring weakness for this team. This series against the Nationals, statistically, in some categories, the best offense in baseball, the 3 Astros starting pitchers, none of them made it through 5 innings, which then further taxed the bullpen, and that's eventually going to catch up to you as well. So a good starter is going to, by domino effect, help out your bullpen here down the stretch. There's a bunch of names that we throw around. You got Hunter Brown, Peter Lambert, Spencer Arrighetti, Mike Burrows, Emi, Christian Javier, Lance McCullers Jr., Blanco, Wisniewski, this AAA guy, Ethan Pecco. That's what, 10 names. 10 starting pitchers that we talk about for the Astros. But realistically, Seth, out of those 10, how many of them do you actually truly trust? Like, say it's a playoff game today and the Astros have to pick a starter. How many of those 10 would you actually trust in a big game?
That I really trust, genuinely, down in my soul, trust, as long as he keeps working his way back, Hunter Brown.
Right.
And that's it. And honestly, man, if I were to go backwards in time and just go, let's do some 7-game series here. Like in the last 7 games, the Astros have allowed 8 or more runs 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
We go to the 7 games before that and they allow 5 or more runs 4 out of those 7 games. And then they had a pretty good stretch. They had a good 7-game stretch where they only allow 1 7-game run in a 7-game or 1 7-run outing in 7 games. And then you go to the next one. They allow 8 runs. They allow 9 runs. They allow 7 runs in a 7-game stretch. They absolutely have to address starting pitching first and foremost if they're actually going to make a real move that makes them into a different team.
Yeah, it's the biggest weakness. I mean, the offense has holes, of course. The whole roster does, but the offense is better than the starting rotation right now. You need to address the biggest weakness, pitching, and it's only getting worse. I'm with you. Of those 10 names, Hunter Brown's the only one I trust. I would like to trust Peter Lambert, but I still have this Cinderella concern of, you know, the other shoe's going to drop, and can we really count on him in a pennant race or in a playoff game? He's been really good all year. But we just haven't seen this from Lambert before this year, that it's tough to still buy in that this is just the new Peter Lambert now, as opposed to this has been a good stretch and he's eventually going to get figured out.
Yeah. I guess the one thing that saves us in the 7-game series is if you have a bullpen day in there somewhere, I feel way better about a bullpen day than most of the starting pitchers. The only problem with that is that, look, you've also got these starters that are only going, they're all going, these last 3 games, not a single one of them made it through 5 full innings. That you can't even rely on having a bullpen day if your relievers are going to be taxed that heavily.
For sure. Yeah, that's a good question, too. Game 1, Hunter Brown starting in a 7-game series. Game 2, I assume Peter Lambert. Game 3, who knows? I don't know. Spencer Arrighetti? I mean, he's been terrible for about 6 weeks now. Do you go with Emi and at least get 3 innings out of him?
You can't even piggyback Emi because it's just he at least does us the honor of just sucking right off the bat usually, and then quitting.
Yeah,
I know Josh Miller pulls him, but this is starting to bother me. It is like, all right, I get it. He's a rookie and all of that, but man, everybody else out there. Like, they take their medicine, and they at least try to go 5 innings or so. With Emi, it's, oh, he's having a hard day. And, guys, he's having a hard time adjusting to the, you know, what time we eat dinner and everything. So let's just be sure we get out there and get him off the mound before it gets too late. I'm trying to be a good teammate, but I'm starting to grumble. I'm starting to be a little bit of a bad presence in the clubhouse.
Emi reminds me of my iPhone, where you spent a lot of money on it, and my iPhone, it's great. It can do a lot of good things, you know, like when his breaking stuff is on, like, oh, you could see the potential there. But the longer you have the phone, the worse your battery gets. And even though it says it's 100%, by lunchtime, it's already dying. And it's similar where by the 3rd inning, like, oh, we already got to go to the bullpen. We didn't get the – usually you expect 5 to 6 innings out of your starting pitcher. You can't get there. Usually I expect my iPhone to make it through the day, but because my battery is so shot after only 2 years, it's like I got to keep charging this thing. It can't last long enough.
Have you ever felt like you were living just a B or B-plus life? It's so dangerous to live that, more dangerous than a B-minus or a C-plus life, because when you're living a B or B-plus life, you don't change it. You think it's good enough. Is it? I'm Susie Welch. I host a podcast called Becoming You. People think, okay, an A-plus life is not available to me, but there is a way. We are all in the process of becoming ourselves. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back as we are live here on The Drive, 1 hour down. And if you missed any of that, you can find us on the Odyssey app. You can go back and check out that first hour. But hang with us here. We appreciate you all jumping on with us and riding with us here on The Drive here on Sports Radio 610. You can get involved on the text line, 713-572-4610, YouTube and Twitch as well. And this is always that interesting time of the year leading into training camp where ESPN and Jeremy Fowler, Clint, goes to all the position groups. They've done cornerback, and the Texans you knew would rate really high on that with cornerback with Stingley getting a nod at two, and then Kamari being the very first. Looked like, if you look at it, how they have honorable mentions, he was the 11th guy right there. But then they did running backs. By the way, I'm really intrigued to see how many guys they have on these lists. But they did running backs. And I say this to the listeners as well. David Montgomery, I don't think I feel like I can say this, right, Clint? I don't think anybody thought that he would make the top 10 list, right?
Army Swiss Knife.
Of running backs in the NFL. But Clint, top.
Do you have the top? Do you have the list?
I do. The top 10 list.
If it doesn't start with Jahmyr Gibbs, I quit.
It doesn't.
I quit.
Bijan Robinson is who it starts with. I thought you were going to give you back. Wait, chill in.
That's fair. I'd rather have Jahmyr, but I get it.
Breece Hall is 10, and it starts with Bijan Robinson. Bijan Robinson, 1, Jahmyr Gibbs, 2, Saquon Barkley, 3, Christian McCaffrey, 4, Jonathan Taylor, 5, Derrick Henry, James Cook, Achan, and then Kenneth Walker, and Breece Hall was 10. And then honorable mention was Josh Jacobs, Kyron Williams of the Rams, Quinshon Judkins of the Browns, and then others receiving votes is the Bears, DeAndre Swift, Javonte Williams, Chase Brown, Ashton Jeanty, Trayvon Henderson, Travis Etienne, and Alvin Kamara. So that ran 20 guys, and there was not only in the top 10, Clint, there was no David Montgomery. There was no David Montgomery in the top 20. And I'll be honest, there's some other backs out there that that could probably think that they could be in the top 20 that's not on that list. Did that hit your ears weird when you heard, all right, they've made a top 20 list and there is no David Montgomery there? And then I just read the names of the 20 names that made it in terms of the top 10 honorable mention and others receiving votes. Does that hit weird for you that David Montgomery is not?
No, it doesn't hit weird. Even though after hearing the list, you could argue that he should be right there in that 19-20 range. I can argue Kamara, that. But the reality of it is no. I mean, look, you're talking about a one-trick pony. I mean, we can sell. I saw an article yesterday, I think, somebody talking about him being a three-down back. Yeah, he's a three-down back if you can stay ahead of the chains. I mean, he is a downhill between the tackles back. If he's catching the ball in the backfield, it's going to be checkdowns. I think when you look at the stylistically the kind of back that he is, I think he starts. The best version of him starts in the probably 12-15 range, and given that he was backing up Jahmyr Gibbs last year and losing reps for another back in the league, pushed him down the list.
Probably his age probably hurt him a little bit too.
Yeah. I mean, look, the fact that the Texans have been pissy poor in a run game probably doesn't help him any. So it doesn't hit me wrong or bother me at all that he's not in the top 20. I could probably put an argument together that he's again in that 19-20 range, but for what? I mean, you're still talking about bottom half of the league.
At least in that top 20 part of it. Yeah, I wasn't surprised, especially when you start to see the names. And as I said, maybe there may be a couple of others out there that you'd wonder, you say to yourself, is he?
Well, them top 6 or 7 are strong, son.
Pushing Breece Hall to 10. When you say Breece Hall's 10, you're like, well, dang, man, yeah. If he's 10, hell, David Montgomery probably wasn't close. But he is, to me, the perfect fit for what the Texans want to do. Right? And that doesn't necessarily have to be a top 10 back, but specifically with what it seems like they want to do, which is be really, really physical and run the football and I think maintain possession of the ball, and they don't mind going 4 yards. They don't mind. For what it is that they want, I think he fits perfectly. To me, the question is, off of it is, I stand by it. By the way it appears that they want to play offense, and now the best success level this offense can have based on how it seems like they want to play, I've said it for most of the offseason. They need to have a top 10 rushing attack. And the thing is, can you have that in your mind without a top 20 back in the league? Can that happen? Now, I will say last year it happened twice. I think that the Commanders were a top 10 rushing attack. Now, they did have a quarterback that can run that adds and helps as well in all kinds of ways, but they didn't have a top 20 guy in that list. And the Giants also. Now, Scataboo was probably really coming on before he got injured, and Jackson Dart probably also adds to the running attack as well, and Tracy's not terrible. But those were the two teams last year there that were in the top 10 rushing units that did not have a guy in the top 20. Of
them. That's interesting, given both of them had down or sub 500 years, weren't they?
Yep.
That's interesting. Look, I think it's possible. I mean, I think it depends on when you talk about a top 10 run game. Like, what does that look like? Is that you know, yards per carry? Is that overall rushing total yards?
This was based on yards per game.
Yeah, the answer to that question is no. I don't think David Montgomery is going to lead the league in rushing. I don't think he's even going to be a factor in terms of leading the league in rushing. You know, I think there's a chance that he can be a guy that the carries, the total carries is up there. Can this offensive
line?
That's
what it would have to be, is the commitment. If they are one of the top 10 teams that has, you know, top 10 in rushing yards per game.
Yeah.
Obviously it won't just be David. You know, obviously it'll be David Montgomery. It will be
Woody Marks
as well. I think it'll be maybe commitment to running it.
Mm-hmm.
Do they try, like, they have a goal of trying to hand that ball off 30 times to those guys and run the football. And I think that's the route that they can get in, which it feels like that's probably what the Giants and the Commanders did, although they have quarterbacks that threaten you running the football too. That kind of helps maybe not having a top 20 guy back there.
Yeah, I just don't see it. I like David Montgomery. I like David Montgomery as an ad to this team, from a personality standpoint. I think the overall approach to offensive football, as I've said multiple times, I think this offense is one of the easiest in the league to defend, and I don't think that bodes well for David Montgomery. You know, I mean, it's just one of those where you look at it and you go, okay, you know, we're gonna cut our splits. You know, and just try to get our receivers involved in a run game, and we'll run everything downhill and try to just stay ahead of the chains. There's nothing exotic about the run game. There's no inside outside, you know, combos where they had the ability to hit you and turn the corner unless it's by accident. So I don't know how schematically they can get there. That would be tough. Can they accomplish what they're set out to accomplish, which is just a quality run game that you can stay ahead of the chains? I think they could possibly do that, depending on how well CJ Stroud plays, but I think they could possibly do that. But lead the league in rushing, be a top 10 rushing offense, I don't think that's going to happen.
I think for the offense to be at its best, it feels like to me that's where they need to be trending.
Yeah,
that needs to be trending, because I think it's the best thing their offensive line appears that they will be able to do is run block, and especially if they can control, you know, when they want to pass and not have to pass the football. Yeah.
They're going to have to. That's why it's so important, and not to get off in the weeds here on it, Ron, but we talk about this offensive line like, I don't think people understand what we're talking about. Like, I don't think like they're going to have to absolutely dominate the line of scrimmage in the box. This isn't a you got a guy.
They feel like they've built a group that can do that.
Well, I mean, I hope they feel like they had. They're the ones that built it. But you don't have a guy, and I don't even know that really. To be honest with you, I mean, I like Woody Marks. I think Woody Marks has probably been a little bit overrated here because he was our guy and he jumped on the scene last year. Like you don't have a guy on this offense that can make a defense pay for giving you a crease. And I mean hit your head on a goalpost type of pay, right? So, and I only say that, I'm not beating on them. I'm just saying, like, I only say that to say, if that's the case, then your production is going to have to be, we're going to out-scheme these guys, right? We're going to go get 3 or 4 yards because this, we got a hat on a hat every single damn time. Making somebody miss is not going to be our forte, right? In order to force a safety off the roof and make CJ's life a little bit more enjoyable, right? You're going to have to, it's not going to be about hitting a crease. It's not going to be about bouncing around outside and going to get in the corner. It's going to be, you have to absolutely, because their defenses are going to put the Texans in a place where you're going to have the numbers. You're going to be able to line up in whatever formation, and you're going to have a hat for a hat. They're going to keep two on the roof. And just say, hey, CJ and Nico ain't going to beat us. We're not going to let the big play over the top beat us. We're going to force you to go 13 plays and score. You're going to have a hat on a hat and inside, and it's going to come down to, can you move those guys? Can you absolutely dominate those guys? And while I think you got better, I don't know if you can dominate your way beyond the second round of the playoffs. That's the key in this run game is better, yes.
Yeah.
Can you run it well enough to force a safety off the roof so that now C.J. Stroud and Nico and Jaden Higgins and all these guys can cook? That's a big step.
Be able to force
that's a big step.
Yeah, so there it is. No David Montgomery in the top 20 of backs here that executive coaches, general managers have put together. By the way, they also did the top rosters. Texans at 9. In the top 10, leave the at least best projected starting lineups.
The arrow's pointed up.
In the top 10, and I think their defense can carry that. Like, their defensive starting, there are not many holes at all.
Well, on the heels of the conversation that we just had, Ron, biggest strength, obviously, edge defense, right?
Maybe even corner, they said also.
Right, on the heels of what we just said, in this article, biggest weakness, offensive line. This group is perhaps the NFL's shakiest starting five. That should not be the case.
Yeah. Especially for how they want to.
That can't be the case. Yes. Based on how you want to play offense, and you're telling the whole league that you got to run it better and you got to improve your run game, but yet people that cover the league look at it and go, yep, biggest weakness still and five up front.
I would have felt more comfortable if they'd have said the group with a lot of questions, because that's how I feel. I feel like it's a group that has kind of questions. I don't know about Shaky. Shaky feels a little rough. I feel like it's almost, for me, questions in terms of wait and see how it looks. Because I do think this, on paper, the offensive line looks better, especially from a physicality standpoint. When you talk about Braden Smith, you're talking about Teller, you're talking about potentially Rutledge in there. And to go along with the guys you had last year,
I mean,
feels like a physical group, a much more physical group. So I'd have.
You used a first round pick and signed 3 free agents. Like, had your pick of 3 free agent veterans, and it's still like just blatantly obvious, like nationally, like, yeah, that offensive line is still the weakness. Whole roster. You can pick any position you want, man. EJ Speed got hurt. I mean, wide receivers, you got two rookies. You got two second-year guys.
One of those other spots. Those position groups.
I mean, you got tight ends, hell, beyond Dalton Schultz, you don't know what the hell we got. Wide receiver, beyond Nico Collins, we think we like Jaden Higgins. We think Jalen Knowles got a chance. We really don't know what the hell we got. Beyond David Montgomery, look, I like Woody Marks, but we really don't know exactly how he fits in this thing. I mean, you could pick any, but you just go with the one position where they just –
that's the one. That's the position that they did the most work in in the offseason.
Whoo, that's painful. That's painful to read.
But it still has them as the 9th rated, projected starting lineup. Top 10.
Defense is good, Chief.
That defense is something else. Ooh, not a lot of holes there. Not a lot of holes there.
That's right. You're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Happy Thursday to you. As you heard, B. Scott again in for the OG John Lopez. I'm going to be honest. Yesterday was a high standard. I know we started talking about bathrooms, which again, Luke Morrow, I am greatly appreciative to you for.
We did start.
We had a lot of fun yesterday, and I'm not going to lie. I went to sleep last night. I was head on the pillow. And I was like, damn, we're going to have to follow that up.
We're going to have to follow that up. Core memories unlocked.
We're going to have to follow that. Literally, core memories unlocked when you were talking about the seat pinching.
I'm telling
literally
you.
Literally that happened. So I don't know if we're going to have core memories unlocked for you, but we will try and have fun here over the 4 hours here on a Thursday. I'm Reginald Atatula. Figgy Fig is on the ones and twos. Get involved with the program. There's various different ways to do that. You can text us on the text line. Funny how that's named. 713-572-4610. Also, there's a great appreciation from us to the Mo Karam Injury Lawyers for the live streams. The YouTube page is Sports Radio 610. The Twitch chat is 610 Houston. And let's get this out of the way, B. Scott. The Astros got walked yesterday.
They did.
And I don't mean walked in like the literal baseball sense. I mean walked as in the dog walk sense, because they got absolutely whooped in this rubber match, in this final game of a three-game set versus the Nationals. The Nationals, mind you, a team that can score runs, but I guess I'd still been, and wrongly, obviously, in the mindset, especially Eric Geddy's one of your better ones. You know, you have an opera hit. Like, it just, it wasn't good, to the point where I will start this with a question that is very unfair, but does Eric Geddy stink now?
He has come back down to earth. Like, he has turned back into a pumpkin. I heard Luke in the morning show talking about Jason Alexander going from last year to, like, kind of this savior or this revelation to turning into a pumpkin this year. Well, this is that to the umpteenth degree and power with Spencer Eric Geddy, for the simple fact that no one ever confused Jason Alexander for being a top of the rotation guy, whereas Spencer Eric Geddy for a time there was looking like he was going to be that. Like, May was not that long ago. We're only in July. And this was the American League pitcher of the month for the month of May. And now this guy has given up, or has at least allowed, 8 runs for the second time in 3 starts. And apparently, do you want to know what his ERA is over his last 7 outings?
You're going to tell me anyways.
Since Ben, I know you love numbers, so I'm going to give
I
you.
I do.
But this won't be an advanced number. This is one that we can all digest together, okay?
I don't like the way you said that, but
no,
okay.
No, what I'm just saying, I want to be inclusive. You and I both like advanced stats, but we want to be inclusive of all the people, okay? Spencer Eric Geddy, since being named the American League Pitcher of the Month for the month of May, owns a 8.7.
Correct.
Let's repeat that. He owns an 8.74 ERA over his past 7 outings since being named the American League Pitcher of the Month for the month of May. And I think that, like, we know enough about ERA in baseball to know 8 ain't good.
It's not good. Thank you, ma'am. I don't know your name. I would like to learn it soon.
I know it.
in that particular five star, or you said 7 starts, right?
Yeah, it's past 7 outings.
Oh and four.
Yeah. So no wins there.
No wins.
Oh means winless.
Three no decisions, and I imagine you felt great in no decision circumstances in that. Yeah, man, this is a problem, right? Yeah. Like, he had a fantastic month of May, literally an ERA of 0.93, and then he followed up with a month of 9 ERA baseball. Like, this is deeply problematic, and what sucks is that when you were doing the math on the Astros rotation, as you were trying to fight your way back into level contention, he was one of the ones that you were checking. And yeah. I understand we were doing that in the midst of this happening, right? But I guess you look at it and you go, oh man, there's probably some bad outings. He'll bounce back. I think we're beyond like the bounce back portion of this. 7 straight outings of bad baseball. Like, we're beyond that, right?
Well, I think that, so to answer that question, we have to ask another one, and that is, what does bounce back look like? Like,
yeah.
Do we have to now curb our expectation a little bit, curb your enthusiasm just a little bit when it comes to Spencer Eric Geddy? Because you're probably not. Like, is the AL pitcher of the month still in there somewhere? I think it's probably safe to say that that was a little bit of fool's gold, and you're doing yourself a disservice to, like, be hoping that he returns back to that. But the point now is that it just can't be this, right? It can't be this because now we're doing a whole different sort of calculation on what the rotation even looks like.
You got to the question.
Like we're having a conversation. You got to the question. Like who are the guys? And like you said, we would pencil in Spencer Arrighetti, Hunter Brown once he's healthy, and now he is.
And Hunter Brown has had some outings where I go, hey, buddy, you want to get back to being Hunter Brown again, big dog?
And that's just the journey you're going to have to walk on. Like you're just going to have to walk down that road with Hunter Brown. Spencer Arrighetti, not so much. And so now we're really just talking about Spencer Arrighetti, or I'm sorry, Hunter Brown.
Correct.
As like the for sure.
Yes.
And I think
shout out to Peter Lambert, who is name number two now.
Yeah.
Like I unquestionably, that is name number two now.
But that has to bother you a little bit.
You don't think so?
That has to. And when I say a little bit, I mean a whole hell of a lot. That's what I mean when I say a little bit.
Correct.
It has to bother you a lot that after Hunter Brown, who is a bona fide certified ace, even if he's struggling at times, you've got Peter Lambert and Tatsuya Imai.
Shout out to Peter, not Paul and Mary Lambert. You mentioned Tatsuya Imai. I feel like Spencer Arrighetti as a potential fourth, as like a fourth name is there. Like between Imai and Arrighetti, I go, man, do I have to pencil either of these guys in? Because
you need at least one of them.
You do have Renel Blanco coming back. We've talked about him, right? Lance McCullers Jr., they're going to try it. They're just going to try it.
Yeah.
I think we know the Astros well enough to know they're going to try it. I don't think it's going to work. It's your homegirl that's like, yeah, but I love him. It's like, girl, I done heard all the issues that you've told me about him.
But she can't quit him.
You can do it if you want to, but no, we're going to be back here having this conversation again. That's Lance McCullers Jr. with all due respect to him. Hayden Wesneski is supposedly coming back, but again, coming back off of Tommy John. How do you feel about that? Christian Javier in the pen right now, he could be a starter. Like, there's a lot of, you know what this is? If we're betting spades, there's a lot of possible books.
Yeah.
No guaranteed books.
No guarantee. It feels real ragtag. And I don't mean that as a disrespect, but it feels like after you get past Hunter Brown, even with all due respect to Peter Lambert and what he has been, the revelation that he has been for you, and Tatsuya Imai starting to kind of figure things out. After Hunter Brown, it feels very much ragtag trying to just piece this thing together.
And the question I have, even though like the AL West itself, not the greatest, can you piece this ragtag bunch together, especially with an offense that is just never going to say die? Can you piece it together enough to win the AL West? And I don't know, especially because the Mariners have gotten back to being a little bit better. The Rangers are actually playing good baseball right now, and you see them this weekend.
Yeah. Can you be a legitimate baseball team if you're ragtagging the rest of your rotation outside of your ace and you essentially have no outfield? Like from
which
from,
is funny
from
because
the mound to the outfield, there's a huge gap.
And it's funny because you asked that, and I think that now the Astros sit in this time period where you're heading towards the trade deadline, and the question is probably do you look for a pitcher or an outfielder?
Yes.
And it feels like an either or proposition.
Feels like a yes.
Well, you would love it to be a yes. However, I look in my palm at the change that I have, and it doesn't stretch for both.
It does not. It does not. And so difficult decisions have to be made for people who are in a difficult spot right now in making decisions. So, and when I say that, I'm talking about a lame duck general manager who is absolutely motivated to make good on what could be his last year. But
and an owner who never wants to say die, even though you look around and you go, maybe at some point.
But you need more than what you got to stay alive. You know, like you say never say die, but I need more to keep this heart beating. And I don't know if they're going to be able to get it.
I hate the timing that this happened. You went on a run. You got yourself within reach. You were like within a game of the top of the AOS. And then something happened. It's like, hey, man, we finally got our account back in the black. You know what I mean? And it looks like we're going to be able to put some money in savings. And damn it, if that ain't the alternator.
Yeah.
What?
It's always some stuff.
It's always something, ain't it?
Always some stuff.
Oh, man. All right. There's an off day at the very least.
The Recap Show is an inside look for fans into the world of global soccer, women's sports, and all things gal culture.
From the inside perspective of two World Cup champions and Olympians.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Who are the best young stars currently in the NFL? We'll talk about it. Payne and Pendergast here. I'm Luke Morrow filling in for Sean alongside Seth. You can always text the show, 713-572-4610. Get to us in the YouTube or Twitch chats. I had saw earlier Bonnie Tyler's name was trending. I didn't look into why, but then I just saw in the YouTube chat they mentioned it. Rest in peace to Bonnie Tyler, who passed away apparently at 75 today. And she had the number one hit in the 80s, Total Eclipse of the Heart, which...
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
who that is.
And yeah. Holding Out for a Hero.
Oh, there you go.
She's big in Footloose, huh?
Yeah.
So was that in Footloose, Ben?
Yes.
The original Footloose? Okay. How old was she?
75.
Oh, that's too early.
And I had no idea that she was Welsh. I just always assumed she was American. I didn't know. But yeah, she had some jams in the 80s. And Total Eclipse of the Heart, of course, gained additional popularity when it was used in Old School, right? And that guy is great in Old School, the singer who does that in all the movies where he sings songs inappropriately, mm-hmm. the Dan Band. That guy's pretty good.
Yeah, but he still lives. That's the real tragedy here.
Yeah. He gets to continue to do the song, but unfortunately, Bonnie Tyler has passed away at 75. So there's the big news of the morning. This is the time of year for these rankings and lists, and CBS Sports put out one where they ranked the NFL's top 25 players aged 25 and under for the upcoming season. So who are the best 25 players in the NFL that are currently 25 and younger for this upcoming year? And there are some things that surprised me and stood out to me on this list. Now, of course, it's one person's opinion. I don't think, or maybe it was a group of writers, but whatever. It's one publication's opinion. But when you look at the bottom of the list, hold on, I'm on the wrong end of the list. But Will Anderson Jr. wound up number 6 on the list.
Yeah.
And then ahead of him, you have Jaxon Smith-Njigba. Drake May is 4. Penei Sewell's 3. Puka Nacua. Nacua is 2. And Bijan Robinson's 1. So it's a good top part of the list.
It's hard to get too overly PO'd that Will Anderson isn't higher on the list. I guess I just always say, hey, man, it's been 1 year with that coordinator and that offense for Drake May. But you're also... he had that incredible season he did. I'm cool with it for now. I'm kind of amazed that Penei Sewell is only 25 years old, cause he was drafted in 2021. I hadn't remembered that he was that young when he got drafted. The biggest one, I was surprised that Bijan Robinson was number one overall. And I get it, but I was a little bit surprised by that. The one that I was upset about was that Derek Stingley is 16th, and he's one of the two best players in his position. And but ahead of them, ahead of Derek Stingley, had Christian Gonzalez and Devon Witherspoon, which they're both really good. And I would say Christian Gonzalez is the closest to Derek Stingley there, but I think it's almost. Pretty much any cornerback ranking you look at right now, it's Surtain and Derek Stingley at number 1 and 2. So to have two, not just one, but two guys ahead of him in this ranking, I feel like he's getting dinged, if anything, because he's older than Christian Gonzalez, or for whatever reason, that he's not as much of the young and upcoming guy. He's an established high quality player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, for me, it was really, honestly, when I looked at this list, my biggest takeaway or surprise was what we had just mentioned in passing was Will Anderson Jr. 6, and you referenced Drake May, who's 4th on the list, and that's 4th overall. Like, I think that's a little high. I know he just went to the Super Bowl, but he didn't play all that great in the playoffs for the Patriots, and I like Drake May. But, like, I think Will Anderson is better at his position. I mean, we just went over the ESPN list where they ranked him 3rd overall in the entire league, regardless of age. I think Will Anderson is higher on the list of defensive ends than Drake May is on quarterbacks.
Yeah, you know what? You're exactly right, though, too. Because even with Jaxon Smith-Njigba, who had an incredible season last year, it's 1 year so far. And, I feel like Will Anderson almost gets dinged for playing at a really high level for multiple years. So it does, if you're doing a list of the top guys under 25, it feels like they should have renamed it something like the most exciting and fastest risers under the age of 25. Because Derek Stingley and Will Anderson are almost getting penalized for having done it longer than some of these guys who did it for 1 year. Jaden freaking Daniels is right next to Will Anderson on this list.
Yeah.
Jaden Daniels is still riding that. Look, This is where Jaden Daniels was lucky he got injured last year, because basically when he was on the field, he looked like he was going to have a year a lot like C.J. Stroud's second season. But because he was injured a bunch, people are just kind of rolling along and be like, well, we got to see. He had a really good rookie year. When was that? That was 2 years ago. But, you know, injuries and whatnot. Like, all right. I'm not giving him a stamp of authenticity yet based on his rookie year performance when I've lived a similar situation not too long ago.
Yeah, I had picked him last offseason as that Stroud candidate that would take a step back, and now obviously injuries played a big role. But yeah, you need to see it sustained first. Speaking of quarterbacks, Jaden Daniels, like you said, number 8 on the list, Caleb Williams, number 7, and then Drake May, number 4. No C.J. Stroud, because he is under 25. No C.J. Stroud on this list of top 25 players under 25. Does that seem like an omission at all or no?
No, because you're including
all positions,
22
all players.
Potential positions here. That's where we are with that right now. I thought when I was looking, did the same thing as you. I got really offended early on because I thought it was ranked higher to lower. And I saw that Cooper DeJean was above Derek Stingley, which I thought meant he was ranked higher, but no, he's actually ranked lower than Derek Stingley.
Yeah, that's when websites and such make these lists, they have to make it a little more convenient. Like a lot of times, especially for the purposes of what we're doing here, you just want to see who's at the top of the list. But they start at number 25, and not only that, like there's a lot of scrolling in this article. Right. If I want to go down and be like, oh, who's the top 5? I have to scroll for 2 minutes here.
I respect the game because, look, what you're talking about is a website that's still trying to make money the old-fashioned way on an actual website, and they want you to be on that page as long as possible.
Yeah.
So you got to be able to scroll down, scroll down, scroll down. I think websites themselves and actual blogs are, like, from a financial standpoint, are making a little bit of a comeback because so many of these damn companies are using AI to write their articles.
Right, I know.
Which I hate, and yet at the same time, they're like, oh, okay, we can actually just spit this out for $0 and sell some advertising.
That's why I do like what ESPN does. Not that anyone really cares, but if you are somebody, a sports fan who reads a lot of stuff online, I like that ESPN will give almost like a chapter or whatever, the top of the article where you could just click that link and it'll bring you right down to that portion.
Oh, yeah, especially in these listicle type things where they've got, they rank 20 different teams that you can click on the top and then do.
Yeah, if you're only interested in the Texans, you just click Houston. It takes you right to that section instead of having to scroll. So I do appreciate that from ESPN.com. They got that part right. They also listed on this list 10 players who barely miss, so that gives you 35 players under 25. Kamari Lassiter not mentioned amongst those top 35. Does that feel like underrating?
That feels like an omission. Again, for a guy that, I know the Pro Bowl doesn't matter as much as it used to, but he made a Pro Bowl already, and I think is going to have to deal with kind of being in Derek Stingley's shadow for as long as those two are on the same team together. I think because Derek Stingley is the guy that is the, in terms of pure cover skills and everything, people just love looking at him as the guy who does he's the ideal, other than the health issues, he's the ideal cornerback in the way he operates. That I think there's always going to be a perception that Kamari Lassiter is, getting the either extra help or it's just easier to play when in fact it's harder to play opposite a guy like that because people are going to target you and they're going to test you. And they've done that the last couple of years and he's risen to the challenge, but there's almost like a glass ceiling that's keeping people from going all in on Kamari Lassiter because he's a little bit more of a, he doesn't fit all those ideal parameters in terms of length, speed, one-on-one cover ability and everything. He's just I don't want to call him a unicorn. He's not that unique or anything, but he just excels in a lot of parts of the game that people don't value as highly, but that make him a really, really good football player.
Do you buy into this idea that came in on the text line? Because obviously you played here for the Texans and you played, of course, even earlier, right at the beginning of the franchise. Do you buy into the idea of like the disrespect for Houston athletes that the Texans are just always overlooked and that's why even as good as a Will Anderson is or Stingley is, they'll be underrated on types of lists like this?
No, I don't think that. No, I don't, because for one, at least in the NFL, I don't think it operates that way as much anymore. And I say that while also thinking that that's a little bit of Danielle Hunter, the fact that, like, if Danielle Hunter had played for a team like a New York team, or if he'd played for the Packers or something, then I think he'd probably have more notoriety. So it's still somewhat of a factor. But if we look at, I mean, this defense, people wouldn't shut up about this Texans defense and all their players headed into the postseason. It was probably one of the biggest talking points in any NFL programming during the playoffs was how much people loved the defense. And so that part of it, and if you look at C.J. Stroud, the amount of adulation that C.J. Stroud got was kind of alarming after his rookie year, to the point where people would accuse guys like us of being overly negative or something if we were like saying like, ah, this feels like a bit much right now. So no, I don't buy into it. I don't think you have to. Houston's like, it's not going to be like the Packers or the Raiders or the Giants or the Cowboys or one of those teams that just always gets attention no matter what. But it's not like the Bills until the last few years, the Jaguars ever. You know, like the Jaguars get really under-discussed when they have a good team. The AFC South in general a little bit, but I don't think it matters as much as it used to.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that. It's become such a, I mean, there's the NFL Network and everything's discussed, and like I think the whole league at this point, like the good enough players or the big enough stories get covered somewhere or continually, because there's just so many outlets and so many people are covering it. It's become such a big sport and such a big thing. It's not like, you know, I hear from my father, my uncles growing up, where it's like, hey, we had two channels and it was just whatever team was on, that's all we could watch, and we didn't know what was going on. You know, it's obviously so different these days.
Ever since fantasy football got so big, I think it started to change in a lot of sports. You know, like Arian Foster was a perfect example. It was a celebrity before the Texans even actually really turned the corner in 2011. People knew who Arian Foster was, partly because he was just such a fantasy football stud. And I don't worry about that, like guys getting ignored wholesale like they used to. Like Danielle Hunter, okay, I don't get the sense that he ever wants any part of being a celebrity, so it doesn't really matter. But like if he did, then it might be a little bit harder. But we also live in a city where J.J. Watt, like there's plenty of guys that, like Aaron Donald is, you know, as like on the same level of notability in terms of what. Like I still think JJ was a better, like JJ at his peak was a better defensive lineman than Aaron Donald. But Aaron Donald is like right there in the same conversation. Like JJ is a much bigger star despite having played at Houston, just because JJ put a little bit of work into being a star too. Mm-hmm. You know, like it was JJ Watt. Go ahead and find anybody who thought J.J. Watt was somehow ignored by the national media when he was winning his three defensive MVPs. They talked about him a lot.
Right, right. Yeah, I think your fantasy point's a good one, because I think Matt Schaub's another guy who had his profile elevated by fantasy. I had a college roommate who would draft Schaub every year because, you know, he would throw for yards and touchdowns, and sure, some interceptions, some pick sixes along the way, but some fantasy players that at least I was playing with always loved Schaub because he'd get you some points. He would be held in higher regard in fantasy than maybe in the real world.
That's one thing that you appreciate as you get older. Myself, every now and then I run into somebody who like used to play me on like either on Madden or on some defunct NFL game that doesn't exist anymore. It's always cool it's actually really enjoyable to hear people like say nice things about you related to a video game or fantasy football. You know, like right. I didn't play a fantasy football position, but I think it's that same dynamic when you're in your 40s and some random guy in a grocery store says like, oh, you used to hit this spin move, it was incredible, I used you all the time on NFL whatever it was,
right?
What are some of the defunct NFL video games?
Well, yeah, not to fanboy, but for me it was ESPN 2K5, which
that's what it was.
I thought was better than Madden back then, and I even though I was growing up and living in Connecticut, for some reason I would do franchises or dynasties with the Texans, and I would actually play as you, because I'm always a down lineman. I don't play as the cornerbacks or anybody.
Yeah.
And so, 21 years ago, I'd play as you.
ESPN 2K5, I think, for whatever reason, there was some kind of glitch in their programming where I was like unstoppable somehow if you used a certain move, because multiple people have told me that. It's never been anything that's been I've never been overrated in my Madden rating or anything, so I must be ESPN. Can we bring back ESPN 2K5?
Yes, please. Those were great games, better than Madden at the time. I'll stand by that. Loved playing with the Texans back then.
All right, it is Wednesday, and that means our guy B. Scott's in the building. Brandon Scott comes in on a Wednesday at 4:40. Shout out to my man working hard, man, getting in the loop, man, yeah, sliding man. In here.
Wouldn't miss it, man.
That 10 to 2 feels a little different than that 6 to 10, though.
It does.
That makes it a little bit more easier to step in here from that 10 to 2 than that.
Hey, there's something about your day being over at 10. You don't want to be bothered at 4. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. You've already decompressed. Like, I had enough time to, like, knock out a couple of errands between the end of the show and coming in here now. It was decent enough. Whereas if you get off at 10, I mean, look, at you are on with your day by 2 o'clock. Whether it's relaxing or out and about, but you're not trying to be bothered by it. You're not trying to come back to work at 4, man.
It's that getting up at 4:30 or 5 to get here on time to start that thing. Hell, man, at 10.
Man, let me tell you, every time I do 6 to 10, I might as well just say this on the 2.
5 o'clock ain't going to do it, boy. You're going to be in there late. You got to get.
Depending on where you're coming from.
When I tell y'all that first hour is a sleepy hour, I feel like by 7 I'd be to hit my tempo. But that's 6 o'clock because you're still fighting off that sleep, man.
Yeah, for a man that doesn't do it every day, it probably takes you a minute.
Man, I do it. I've done it once a year here at Radiothon. I try to get myself real good juice.
What that first hour feel like to you?
I try to get myself real good juice, but we've had Seth, and Seth is wired. He is
that's
up.
True.
He is true. He gives you a little energy. Yep. All right, a lot going on, but a lot not going on a bit. And we've kind of talked about this a little bit. Due to some of these lists, thank God for these lists, some of these lists that are rolling out. What would you say the Texans run game needs to look like this year?
Yeah, I think it needs to be, this was the response I got to a similar question. As a matter of fact, this was inspired by the question that y'all asked yesterday of could they have a top 10 run game if they don't have a top 20 running back, right? I put that out to the people on the B block just to see what they thought about it.
Yeah.
And somebody responded to me, and forgive me for not remembering the name of who it was. They were like, man, if they could just go from 32nd, which in some rankings they were, like in like the, some of the advanced stats, like run block win rate or, you know, stuff like that. If they could go from 32nd to like 15th, that would be massive. So we discussed this a little bit on In the Loop.
A massive jump.
That's what I'm saying. That would be a massive jump. That would be a massive enough jump. So it's like. Probably not. Could they do, to the question that y'all asked yesterday, could they do that, have a top 10 rushing attack without a top 20 running back? Probably not. But then you also have to ask yourself, do they need to be, to your question now, do they actually need to be a top 10? If they could be top half, which 15 would be, that would work. That would work. And it will also, and you know this, Clint, we all do it if we follow football. Once you establish that run game just a little bit, just a credible run game, the credibility of it, the threat of it, that opens up so much more. And now we're talking about not just a credible run game, but a viable pass game as well. And I think you absolutely need that in year 4 of C.J. Stroud and year 2 of Nick Caley.
Well, they have absolutely, not only do they need it, B. Scott, they have gone all in on it. You know what I mean? They have pushed all the chips to the middle of the table, and we are going to go sign guys that first and foremost move mass up front, not decipher pass rushes and can pass off pass rushers and figure out the pressures and pick up the games up front. No, we're going to get guys that get their hands on people and maul people. At least we hope they can still do those things. Now, they're NFL linemen. Obviously, they're going to be able to figure some stuff out. But I think they've positioned themselves in a place – top to bottom offensively where they've got to be able to maul folks.
I think the big question, like, it starts with, not to be cliche about it, but it's going to come down to, did this offensive line remake work? Like, how good is it really? If it's along the lines of what it's been, then the answer is absolutely not, right? Like, just clearly and flat out. But if the offensive line and the remaking of it is actually effective, I think once we get to the running backs, it's more important to focus on the 1-2 combination, which I think is big. Like, they got this 1-2 combination, not any one guy who's a top 15 or 20 guy necessarily.
You think Woody Marks is going to be used a lot carrying the football?
I think he should be. I think if they're smart about it. Now, if they want to be fools about it and just try to run David Montgomery into the ground and treat him like he's Joe Mixon.
They said he's a three down back.
They can talk like that. And
he does it all, Clint.
He can actually be a three down back and not necessarily have to be the back on every three downs. He can have three down back skills, but they also be smart about how they manage their assets and specifically their players. In this case, give Woody Mark some carries.
Yeah, look, he can be a three down back if you stay in third and short. You get into this second and eight, third and seven type stuff. He ain't a three down back. But I do want to ask y'all that question real quick. How do you think David Montgomery compares to Joe Mixon? The Joe Mixon that we got.
What are we doing? Come on now, Clint.
Right. No. I ask you the question to make sure I'm not crazy. So
just to be clear, it is not a comparison. He is a fine football player. Joe Mixon, I thought. And maybe we've even forgotten because he didn't play last year.
Joe was better than I thought he was.
Joe was a different season. Breed of run. And it's, for me, it started at training camp when I just kind of laid. I'd never seen Joe Mixon in person. And when I saw him, I was like, that's Joe Mixon? Dude was every bit of 6'1", a tank, and could move, was bigger
and
than.
And could get the edge.
Was bigger than all the other running backs and faster than all the other. It was like, okay, this is a different type of. Everybody else just looked like a running back.
He was a three down back.
Joe Mixon looked like a little bit of a superhero version of a running back, basically.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to overplay it. That's literally what it was. I don't think that's what you're getting in David Montgomery. You're getting a solid veteran running back who's been really good, I think, for a decent amount of time, who is going to absolutely need backup. And I do like the idea of Woody Marks being properly placed and cast as your second back as opposed to your lead back, and that being your second back as opposed to, say, a Nick Chubb who doesn't have as much left in the tank as I'm sure they would have preferred. I thought Nick Chubb was actually fine last year for his role, but Woody Marks should be a spark in that regard, should be a much better second option, and I think that David Montgomery should be a much better first option than Woody Marks or Nick Chubb could have been last year.
Brandon Scott with us live here on The Drive every Wednesday at 4:40. You catch him tomorrow on In the Loop. Him and Reggie will hold it down. How real, as we switch gears a bit, and you cover the Rockets, you talk about the Rockets, in season, off season, you're at the games. How serious should we take the possibility of Kevin Durant not being a part of this team?
Yeah, more serious than I would like to. I think when it comes down to it, man, they got two salaries that are like close to max level salaries. That's Alperen Şengün and Kevin Durant. Alperen Şengün, funny enough, even with his name being in trade rumors for no less than the last 2 to 3 off seasons, seems to be somebody that they are committed to, not just now, but for the long run, much more so than Kevin Durant. Right. And I don't buy into the reports that we see out there, or at least I meet him with a little bit of skepticism of, hey, he wants to go to Detroit and Kevin Durant is kind of looking at his other options. I can't rule it out. I don't necessarily buy into it because we don't see like the reporters who would be reporting that, the people that Kevin Durant will be leaking that to, are not saying these things.
Yeah, right.
So I think there's some caution with the reporting, but you can't rule it out just because the salary and the fact that he is not clearly, just by virtue of his age, a part of their long-term plan. And we got to be real about last year. It was disappointing. I don't think Kevin Durant was disappointing, but the actual season with Kevin Durant was disappointing. They got to do some real soul searching on what they feel like their ceiling is with Kevin Durant. It's got to look different to them now than it did when they first got him a year ago.
What do you, if, as a fan, if I wake up one morning and Kevin Durant is no longer a Rocket, what does that mean? What does that look like for the team?
Yeah, see, so now you look at it and you're trying to figure out, okay, what will we get back for Kevin Durant once the Jaylen Brown trade? What I'm saying is that, like, a lot of the ideal options for Kevin Durant are now gone. So at this point, you figure, if you haven't traded him yet, if you didn't trade him when we had that breakneck stretch of trades and acquisitions and signings, like right before free agency and right when free agency started, then what are you trading him for now? It would have to be something like really out of nowhere. You hear people talk about Kyrie Irving, right? But are you trading one old guy for another? Or if you were trading for Kyrie Irving, would you not rather like pair him up with the guy that he played with before and didn't really get a chance to really see what that looked like? Like, you would want to pair him with another
star of his ilk.
Like you're saying, though, it feels like, and I think Clint's probably getting to this, it feels like if that's a move you make, I don't know if you're starting over, but it feels like you're at least taking a step back in terms of, because it's as you're going through it, it's hard to think you're going to make a trade for Kevin Durant and then get somebody back that puts you in the same spot immediately of a contender, the level of contender you are with Kevin Durant. Like if you, Detroit is the name that's popular. Who the hell do they have outside of Cade Cunningham, which they're not giving up?
Not a soul.
That would bring, they would bring back, and you'd be like, all right, we're competing in a different level. This isn't a Julius Randle and Kevin and Karl Anthony Towns trade where you're like, we're just kind of mixing it up. Like it feels like if they make this move, this to me is a sign of this thing is maybe shifted to restarting this thing over.
Kevin Durant at age 37 averaged over 26 points a game, played in 78 regular season games, and gave you 50-40-88 splits. So that's 50% from the field, 40% from three, and just short of that 90% from the free throw line with a poor 88%. Where are they going to get that type of production? Yeah. 78 games, 26 a game, second team all NBA, 50-40-88 splits. And so if the Rockets are serious about competing in 2026, 2027, there's no guarantee that Kevin Durant's going to be able to replicate that at age 38. But if they're serious about competing this upcoming season, he will be on their basketball team.
I agree. I completely agree. Because if they don't, that's a different. And it's just there's nobody else out there. There's no Brown. There's no.
Would you like be here for Kyrie?
Oh, I would. I wouldn't give up Kevin Durant for Kyrie because a swap for swap.
Yeah, I agree.
But like if I could flip that, if for some reason Masai Ujiri wanted to get the old band back together, and we saw he was trying to do this with Kawhi Leonard and facilitate a trade with the Clippers to bring him to the Mavs. That didn't work. He ended up going back to Toronto. But if he's romantic about them old Raptors and got like a heart for Fred VanVleet, and we could somehow flip Fred VanVleet and some cash or something like that for Kyrie Irving, I mean, that would be Dallas getting got twice in just 3 years.
I don't think he's – I don't. I mean, you got it. You need Nico to be over the helm.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's happening.
You need Nico Harrison but to like be over the helm to get that done.
In a fantasy world, I would absolutely do that, Clint.
In a heartbeat. The Rockets need Kyrie to come play with Durant and this group.
Now, I will say this because I think this is important. I don't think whatever you do with Durant – I don't think Durant has to impact – the mentality of your timeline and where you're at, right? Because you've got these draft picks, you've got young players, but what you should absolutely be doing is maximizing your opportunity with Kevin Durant and not wasting the twilight of his career when he's still playing at an all NBA level. Like that's just opportunity cost. You can do that without saying, hey, we're rushing things and we're accelerating our timeline because we got Kevin Durant. No, you're just trying to put together a real contender while Kevin Durant is still good and not waste his time and yours.
Yeah, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. I'm Reginald Atatula alongside B. Scott in for the OG John Lopez.
That's right.
We got Figgy Fig, of course, on the ones and twos, who I've already told him. I am wearing this French jersey right now. Obviously, France playing Morocco.
That bad boy is clean, too, by the way.
I appreciate it.
I've been checking it out since I saw you earlier. I'm like, man, That looks good on you, brother.
It has to, because Figgy's been out here outdoing me on the soccer.
Okay.
Have you seen him with these jerseys?
I didn't realize we had a competition going on.
I didn't either until he was out here wearing all these jerseys. And well, I was like, hold on, I need y'all to remember who runs this.
But see, Figgy's a fly guy, so I'm never trying to cut. Look, I'm securing my own, so I'm never trying to compete with Figgy. I'm not doing that.
I didn't think I was either until I felt like Bodie all of a sudden. I was like, wait, he's got my corners? I want my corners.
Yeah, I feel that. Got to take these corners back.
These are my corners. Hold on. You can have a lot of the corners, man. Like, I'm not beating you on the updos and everything, man. You got the glasses. The head wraps be on point. You can't be coming in here and taking soccer jerseys from me, bro. You know?
Ruthless, man.
I had to get my spot back. So
have a heart, Figgy.
Right. Think of the children, man. I don't even know what the relevance of that is, but just think of them.
Right. It's just fun to say.
It really is.
Think of the children.
Think of the children.
What children? The children.
The
children, all of them. All right. But no, obviously the soccer continues. World Cup, we missed you yesterday. It was rough without you. We get it back today. France playing Morocco at 3 p.m. And obviously, unfortunately, I'm interested to see how many people are still tied in. France is a fun team, but there's no U.S. left in this tournament, and see how that changes the way things go. But with the U.S., you know, bouncing out of the World Cup, a lot of the conversation has turned to a familiar front when we talk about soccer in the U.S., which is, why aren't we developing guys to make this U.S. team that's a part of like a huge country that should be one of the powers? Why are they not a power? What is not happening there? And there's a lot of people talking about various different things about investment and the ways in which, you know, internationally young folks jump into academies at young ages that are directed towards getting them better at soccer versus here having to play through clubs and pay to play and then ultimately maybe going to college.
Yeah,
and
I feel like the pipeline looks different.
Yeah, the pipeline looks very different. You said that very quickly in a way that I took a long way to get here. But the point that I think that everybody is missing that I'm just mind-boggled about, aren't we? We're just bad at development generally in sports now. Like, it's something that I found to be fascinating now is we as a nation are not actually good at developing any talent. It's amazing that we do, and I think it might be just because of the heft, the number of people that we have that we're able to develop talent. But how many times have we had conversations about the top players in the NBA all being international?
Yeah.
How many times have we had conversations about youth baseball and all of the problems of it? I think that we're just bad at developing talent, period, now.
Yeah, I don't know if we're bad at it, but we're certainly not as good at it as maybe we once were, and we're not as good at it as perhaps we would like to think, you know, sort of our American exceptionalism sort of approach to everything, not just sports, but probably everything. We probably are a little bit too much dip on the chip a lot of times when it comes to some of these things. But, yeah, no, I see it. Like, I think a good way to put it, a succinct way to put it, is we losing recipes.
We really are.
It does feel like we losing recipes to where, like, we still cooking the food, and the food still tastes pretty good, but it don't taste like your mamas and your grandmamas and your aunties and the folks that really had the recipe. And so I honestly am at a loss and trying to figure out, well, how do we get back that recipe? How do we find it? How do we recreate it? Or at the very least, maintain where we are right now? Because I would say that we're still pretty good, but it's going in the wrong direction. We still have great athletes, right? We still produce really compelling sports. But it does feel like the bridging of the gap makes us a little bit uncomfortable of how close things are internationally in the sports that we hold dear in this country.
Yeah.
And certainly with soccer, the way you described it and the way I said it, like the pipeline just looks a lot different for us here in America, in the States, as it does abroad.
Let me kick this at you and see if you agree with this, and maybe this can get us somewhere, right? Because when we're talking about the development and when we felt like we were better at this, I feel like we were largely better at this when we leaned on, and this is an apolitical observation about a thing that does delve into some level of politics. We kind of had state-subsidized development of all of our folks, because what is public schools if not, you know, obviously state-funded education, whatever. And part of that, to, you know, I guess the thought process was to have well-rounded, you know, children and ultimately human beings and citizens. You didn't just teach them about arithmetic and reading and writing. You also made sure that they understood the arts and that they understood or some physical education. And then we had teams, and those are the teams that ultimately, those are the places and the centers that we developed. And it was all through the context of we are developing human beings. And then, you know, our sports got a little out of hand, but we were still developing human beings and helping them grow. I think that the further professionalization of youth and youth sports, whether we're talking about like club teams or even the thing that I always think about, I think Bo Jones says this very well, is that as soon as you start moving to play sports, that's a profession.
Yeah.
And we got so deep into that where it becomes so much about like the professionalism of it, where everybody is worried about wins and not about development. And I think that that actually ends up in a place where we are not focusing on developing the human or the player anymore. I think we're all worried about winning at every level, even all the way down to Pee Wee.
Yeah, that is a difficult philosophical place to go on in terms of like, why don't our public schools prep us for this better than they used to? Because like you said, it used to be that you could just go to your public school and you could develop within your community and with your own school, and you didn't have to move to the next county or move out of state
to develop in a professional kind of way. Like you could just kind of do it. It was a lot more natural. And so I think that just the calculus has changed a little bit in terms of like how much money are you willing to spend? How far are you willing to go to do this thing? And it does seem like in soccer specifically that in other countries they are willing to pay that extra dollar for, like, it's not like we're not willing to pay the extra dollar for sports or this particular thing.
Correct. The investment is monetarily, I guess, is there in some ways, for sure.
Yeah, and there's a lot of things that factor into this. How does the economy change and fluctuate up and down throughout these different eras that we're talking about? Let's just call it over the last 30 years. The economy's been up, it's been down, it's been up, and it's been down again, right? And so you could look at that, but then also just comparing the countries, it does seem like those other places are willing to invest at least more in soccer the way, say, we do in club baseball or in AAU basketball. We're still doing that. And there's this own question of, like, basketball, for example, is the AAUization of basketball ruining the fundamentals of the game? And are the kids abroad that are learning basketball learning a better and more fundamental game? Like, that's its own question. But I think that's a big part of it, is that just the investment, both in community and the monetary investment, is not there.
Yeah, and I don't do all this to villainize. I think I'm more interested in like the analytical kind of idea of breaking this down. The thing about this, though, is the fixing of it, I don't have a great answer, because I don't think that first and foremost, the ways that this has become professionalized and all about winning, whether it's, you know, I'm at this high school or this middle school and I need wins to justify my job, whereas it used to be like you're just the coach, right? And winning is cool, but ultimately your job is really, you know, facilitating the growth of these young men or women in these certain instances, right? I do think that the system that they are reacting to is one that makes sense. It's not like they're being unfair here, and it's not going to change, right? Like, that's the thing that I find interesting. It'd be one thing if I said that the environment and the factors that got us here, we can push the roll those back to where then maybe the natural environment returns, right? It's almost like an ecological where, well, if we cut down the greenhouse gases, maybe the temperature will go back down. Like, I don't think that that's what we're talking about here. This is the environment that we have. And so I do wonder, will it be possible for us to roll back our capabilities towards a place where we did a little bit better development, not just like competition at the youth level, but actual development in the environment that we inevitably have with all the money and all this stuff?
Yeah, I think the most simple way to look at it is that, at least in soccer specifically, and I know we are kind of open this and saying, hey, we don't develop, period, the way that we used to. But I think with soccer, it does come down to this. And I was thinking about it earlier in the week. Sometimes it comes down to, what did your dad play? And what did your parents play? What are they introducing you to? What was the first ball or stick that you bought for your child, right? And for me, it was a football.
Yeah.
For me, it was a basketball. For me, it was a baseball and a glove. And so, like, if your father didn't play, and this is the issue with soccer that we're having here in America, it's like, if your father didn't play soccer, or if your father was dismissive of soccer,
yeah,
Is he also likely to spend a bunch of money developing you as a soccer player?
Well,
and how do we get there?
That's fun, because you're talking about the passion, and now this is a whole different element. I think we're losing the passion for these games at the young level too.
Oh, because
it used to be
that for sure.
It used to, I played basketball not because I thought I was going nowhere with it, because I loved basketball. Yeah. I played football because all my friends were playing football, and it looked really, really fun, and I loved having that fun and playing football. I think so many of these kids are like, and honestly, the parents, which is the scary thing. This is in means to an end, and the economics on the backside of this justify me trying to spend all this money and hopefully getting this kid to a place where they're going to make millions upon millions of dollars and justify our whole family. In a weird way, I think domestically,
that's the issue right there, man.
Domestically, that business aspect of it, I think does not compute with a lot of people with soccer. Yeah. I don't know if it even exists, but I don't think it computes with people with soccer here. So I think that's part of why soccer isn't as big here yet, because people don't view it as a business, which, again, is scary that is the lens and the framework that we have with all of this.
Dude, yep. from watching the World Cup this year, my son is just turned 11 years old in April.
Mbappe?
And I'm already regretting. I mean, he's 11.
Yeah.
And so
we're a little late for Project Mbappe.
Exactly. So I'm already regretting having not introduced him to the game. And he's been introduced to the game, but not actually investing a little bit more in just seeing what was there.
Can I give you one of the saddest texts that I've gotten in here in this segment? From the 713, when I told my brother how fantastic his son's, my nephew's, swing was when he was playing high school ball, my brother responded, quote, "It better be. I paid a fortune for it."
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the feeling.
That hurts. That hurts. Yeah. All right.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator Craig Thomas.
In seasons 1 and 2, we were joined by Neil Patrick Harris, Kobe Smulders, Brian Cranston, Ashley Williams, Wayne Brady, Jenna Fisher and Angela Kinsey, Joe Manganiello, and my brilliant co-creator Carter Bays. And now we are diving into season 3.
So whether it's your 50th rewatch or your first time through, follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.